If you're doing church marketing the same way you were even just 5 years ago, you're probably making some huge mistakes. And in this conversation, we're going to break down the 8 biggest mistakes that we see churches making all the time. Let's do this. You're listening to the Reach Right Podcast, the show dedicated to helping your church reach more people and grow. Well, hey guys, I'm Thomas.
And I'm Ian.
And today we're talking about why your church marketing isn't working, and we're also going to give you some tips on how you can fix it. So this should be helpful, I hope, to a lot of our audience. This is what we eat, breathe, and sleep, Ian. You and I are talking church marketing all the time, and that's kind of our whole mission here at Reach Right, is helping churches reach more people and grow. You just got back from a conference helping church plants become the most visible church in their city.
That's right.
And we say that with some level of certainty that we're able to even a young church plant can be the most visible church in the city if they some of these things right. So I think it should be good, huh?
It should be good. It should be good. And so, yeah, hopefully helpful. Still an area that a lot of churches, make tons of mistakes in, even though churches have become more savvy with their marketing for sure than we saw 10 years ago or even 5 years ago, but still a lot of churches doing things the way they did it 20 years ago for their marketing, which we'll identify some of those things. So Thomas, why don't we dig in? Mistake number one is talking about yourself more as a church than the guest.
Yeah. And this might be a little bit weird to people to even hear this one, I think, because in some way, and I get this, I'm sympathetic towards this thinking, like the message of the gospel and Christianity is that I must decrease and he must increase, right? So like we don't necessarily like want to like make our guest or our visitor or someone that doesn't know the gospel yet, we don't want to wrongly encourage them to think that they are the centerpiece of the story.
Yeah.
But I would argue that this approach is just meeting people where we all already are at. Like that's really what we are naturally wired to do, is be the main character in our story. And from a purely marketing perspective, people want to hear more about what you will do for them than what you are. There's a whole framework that's called like the story brand framework that we don't necessarily, we're not coaches or partners with them or anything, but we do love the concept of it. When it comes to marketing, you want to make sure that you are, that the hero of the story is your customer or your person out there that you're trying to reach. And your role is to be the guide. Like to, you're the Obi-Wan Kenobi. And your person you're trying to reach is the Luke Skywalker. You're going to help them get to the place that they want to be with things. So that's a good framework to think about things for a church perspective. Not that, you know, Jesus is the main person in the story. He's the one we want to make great. He's the one we're going to make famous. He's the one we're going to talk about in all of our services. That's all true. So please hear me in this. But I have seen that marketing, even for churches, it will be more effective if you want to reach people, not talking about, you know, us as the guide, here's what we're good at, here's how we're going to, here's how we're so important and everything, but it's instead showing people what they're going to get, the journey you're going to take them on to help get them closer to Jesus and why that's going to be better for them in their life. That's kind of the framework we think about that from.
Yeah, and it's reminded me, we've had several churches that we've worked with that have implemented a story brand type approach, even with their taglines on their website. And I was trying to remember one that was, life is complicated. You know, you want your life to be better. We're here to help you figure it out. You know, so it was kind of addressing, and I didn't say it exactly the way they wrote it, but it was something along those lines. But yeah, you know, and I think it's one thing you said, Thomas, I started thinking too, is that it's tempting and it actually, you know, it's easy to just be proud of what God is doing at your church. Again, being proud of what the Lord is doing and, you know, being able to share how many salvations and all of that. And you do want to share those things. Mm-hmm. Obviously you want to share results and successes because that is about people, but sometimes you're right. You know, we could just start thinking, we can get very internal without helping it and forget about, you know, the guest having needs for the first time. And if, and we can almost come off as arrogant about everything that our church is doing great, even if we didn't intend to do it. So, and again, so we're not saying don't celebrate what God's doing, talking about different ministry victories and all the other things like that. But I think it's just being reminded, though, that you, you know, can sometimes take that too far and take the focus off of first-time guests. So that's really good. So this next one's, you know, I'd say about this next one, I've seen a lot of churches get better at this compared to 5 years ago. They've caught on, but it's still something that I see is a challenge. That's inconsistent branding. That confuses people. So when you're not consistent in your branding, it can not only confuse people, like we're saying, but it can make you less memorable.
So I think that's the main thing is that it's all the things that you're doing out there. You want it to have a similar consistent feel so that they know that, and when they see your church out and about, that they put that together with everything else that they've seen there. So, so when we talk about branding, like the thing that most of us go to is like our church logo. And you know, that's true. Like that's a big part of it, but it really is just bigger than that. It's like, it's the fonts that you use. It's the way that you speak. It's the color palette that you choose on everything. It's everything that you say and everything, every way that you look as a church, just being as consistent as possible with all of those things. So like the way you talk on Instagram, if one post is like just, you know, you talking like you're a Gen Zer and, you know, calling people Rizzlers and that kind of stuff. And then on the next post, you're using terms like sanctification and penal substitutionary atonement. Like it's just an inconsistency that you have penal in the way that you're, it's inconsistent. Right.
Yeah, that's right. So,
so I think that that's the thing is that like you have value like in the in how often people are encountering your church. So like the same way if people drive by your church every day, they see the same sign, they start to associate that with you. But we live in a time now where there's a lot of pack it up churches or maybe you just don't have as much traffic coming by. So everything you're doing online and digitally, if you are popping up on people's Instagram feeds and it's consistent every time with the same kind of filters on your photos with that same kind of look every time, people start to remember, oh, I feel like I've seen this before. And they'll start to remember your church and think about you and there just be a consistency there. So we recommend that every church has a very clear brand guidelines document. We have one at our church. It specifies, here's the way we use our logo. Here's the way we talk about ourselves. Here's the way that we, the typography that we use and the fonts, here's the colors that we use, here's the colors we never use. And just, we're really consistent about those things. It helps to reinforce our brand all the time. So that's a service we have here at ReachRight. Also, we do logo and branding work for churches. And part of that is giving you a clear brand guidelines document so that you can pass it along to your team and say, hey, we only do things like whenever we write something, always use these fonts. Whenever we use these colors, always use this exact hex code. Not just, you can't just say, oh, we use green at our church. Like it's like, what is it? Lime green? Is it forest green?
Yeah,
is
which,
it
like a there's a lot blue of different green? Kinds of greens.
Right. So like you got to be consistent with those things. And it's best to have all that kind of stuff documented and have everybody know these are the rules. Let's just stay within kind of these confines here. So if you're looking for help, I'll leave a link in the description how you can learn more about some of our branding services and that stuff to help you guys come up with a branding guidelines. It doesn't have to be done that way. You can do this all in-house, but if you're looking for help, we're here to help with some of those things.
Yeah, absolutely. And another thing you made me think of that came to mind is, again, we've been doing this for a long time, Thomas, and you and I used to help churches get a great website established, but that great website used to consist of all of this flash and all of these animations and things. And we saw there was a period of time where churches would design a completely different website for their youth and kids ministry, and all of the branding and the colors would be crazy and off the wall. And, you know, for a season and a time, churches were able to have a little fun with that. But I think what churches learned is when they did that, or their youth and kids ministry had a completely different feel to it, it just clashed with their church's overall brand and made them less memorable to parents and everything. And so, and we're not saying don't have fun and you can't have different colors within your kids' ministry or anything like that.
Yeah.
But as far as the branding, you know, and there was a time where ministries also all had their own totally different logo. And we just don't see that as a good practice in general anymore. Not to say you can have a little bit of a variant with some things or whatever, but it has to be the overall brand consistency. And it's just the way people see marketing in general and are wired now, that consistency is what stands out for sure.
It really is key.
Next one is posting without a plan. What do we mean by this, Thomas?
Yeah, it means that when you're posting on social media, you need to have a rhythm and a plan that you consistently stick with. A huge marketing mistake is that, and I see this all the time, is churches get out ahead of themselves and they start to post on social media and they go gung-ho and they last about 2.5 weeks and then they go dark for months after that.
Yeah.
So I encourage every church to have a very specific plan. Be real with yourself and say, this is how many posts I can do per week on these different channels. And the number of channels is totally up to you. It's okay if you're only on one channel as a church. If you're only using Instagram or if you're only using TikTok or YouTube or that's totally fine. Like don't get ahead of yourself on that stuff. And then just come up with a commitment to yourself that for the next year, I can commit to doing this many posts per week. I can do this 52 weeks in a row, and we can be very consistent in this area, and we will have a plan in that way. So reasonable plan would be we're going to post 3 times a week on Instagram for the next 52 weeks, for the next year. Having that kind of a plan and sticking to it is going to get you much better results than posting 150 posts in a 2-month period and then coming back and just not doing anything after that. So the consistency is what wins the game when it comes to social media. So having a plan to do that is really important for churches.
Yeah. We offer a free social media calendar, don't we, Thomas?
We do. Yeah. If you're looking for a plan to help you come up with some of those things, we'll leave a link in the description for that as well. You can get that free download. It just kind of is a tool to give you more ideas on things you can be posting out there and helps you to stay consistent.
There you go. And this next one's this next mistake is ignoring Google search and Google Maps.
So I hear this all the time, and it's so funny to me because I'm a pastor of a church, executive pastor at my church here in Hawaii, and we see a decent flow of visitors. We probably have about 10 to 15 visitors every week at our church, and I cannot tell you the number of them that are telling us that they found us on just doing a Google search, or they found us, they look for churches near me, and they are always like surprised that we kind of came up in that search. And I don't really know why. It's just kind of, it's so weird. I found a church on Google. Isn't that kind of an odd thing? To a lot of people, that's strange. Now, they don't know that I run a...
or whatever.
They don't know that I run and you and I kind of founded a company here that's what we do is we help churches get found in these areas. Yeah. And so typically I just kind of smile and say, that is so cool. That is amazing. Yeah. I'm so glad that God brought you here today. And it's again, I don't take any credit for it. It's still the Holy Spirit that's prompting them to do those searches and calling them. It certainly isn't anything we're doing. But I will say that like being intentional about this is absolutely game changing for churches. Yeah. If you can rank on those kinds of searches when people are looking for churches near me. So in the marketing industry, we'd call those bottom of the funnel searches. They're people that are looking to make a decision on finding a church
They've made up their mind. They're looking for a church,
Yeah, so these are the people you want to get in front of. These are the people that are most likely to come, get connected, join the life of your church, and it's a great place to start. So this also is a service that we offer. And I'll just mention this. You could do this on your own. We have a totally free report you can get. So I think this is the first step for every church is figure out where you stand right now. So when someone puts in church near me, like where does your church show up there? I'll leave a link to this here. If you just put in the name of your church, we'll do all of the back end stuff and find like your exact location and crunch all the numbers and give you a really specific report that shows you in multiple areas all around your city, where do you rank on Google Maps? Because here's what happens is that if you do a search for churches near me when you're sitting in your church office, you better come up number one there, because you're sitting like you right. couldn't be any more near if you're sitting in the church office, right?
I've so
if you're
not coming up number one, some churches tell me, not to interrupt you, Thomas. I've had some churches tell me that they don't even rank when they do it from their office or parking lots, and that's a problem. So
that is a problem,
a real problem. Yeah.
But the on the other side, we have people sometimes tell us, no, we don't need help there. I do searches and we come up number one for churches near me. It's because you're the nearest church to you right now.
That's
what you want to do is if you get 2 miles away, well, who comes up then? Like, is your church showing up on those searches?
Yep.
That's the kind of thing that you can really start to work on if you do a few things right with Google Maps and getting your listings right and getting reviews right. There's a few like kind of variables you have to move around a little bit. Yep. But if you do it yourself or you get some help from a company like ours to do it, it can really move the needle. I'd say on average, we probably have about 4 or 5 people a week that tell us, I heard about you from Google, or I did a search or something like that on our invite cards, or they just tell us personally. Yeah. That's kind of the numbers. So it really moves the needle. We're not a mega church. There are much larger churches that are in Honolulu than our church, but we consistently rank really well, especially within about 8 miles or so of where our church is, which is a pretty far distance by Honolulu standards here. So you got to take it seriously. I hope you take advantage of that free report there. That'd be really helpful.
Yeah, and especially if you're in an area with a lot of churches too. And again, it's not about competition, but why don't you want your church to be just as visible as the other guys, right? So for sure. But and one last thing I'll say to that. If it does seem weird to a church, well, think about it. If people are Googling restaurants near me, shoe stores near me, mechanics near me, hardware, why wouldn't they do the same thing when they're looking for a church? You know, again, so it's not weird. It's just the way people do it now. So, but our next one, you're going to love this one, Thomas, ignoring the power of AI.
Yeah, resident AI guy here. So, all right. So there's a few ways I could approach this. Here's the way I want to talk about AI for this one and the biggest opportunity. And I think I'd say it's an opportunity, but it's the biggest kind of thing we need to keep our eye on because the world is changing in this area. So I have pivoted personally, and I am using Google search at least half as much as I used to. And I am now doing those same searches in something like OpenAI or ChatGPT or Claude or one of the, mostly ChatGPT is what I'll use for that. I do searches there and you need to figure out ways, and we can help with these kinds of things. The stuff we're really digging into right now here at ReachRight is there is a whole discipline of making sure that different businesses, or in our case, churches, show up on searches in AI. So when I put in a query into ChatGPT, how do we make our church show up as an answer? Or how do we make it reference some of the things we talk about at our church when someone does a search like that? So this is something that's really important you need to keep your eyes on. We don't have time to get into all the details of exactly how to do it right now, but the main takeaway is that it's pretty similar to what you do for general search engine optimization. Is you're writing content on your site, you're making sure you're listed with different directories and those kinds of things. But case in point, just this week, I'm doing a project in the back of my house working on a deck. And we had to buy a whole bunch of deck boards, and my contractor, he had kind of made some recommendations and, you know, went to a local place and got me a quote, and the quote was just really expensive. So I figured I'm going to do some research. I didn't go to Google for like the first time on something like this. I went to ChatGPT and I said, hey, I'm looking at doing this kind of composite decking, and I want it. I know about these two companies. This is what my contractor mentioned to me. What are my other options? Who are the suppliers for these things? And give me a price estimate for each kind of board per linear foot. And ChatGPT spits out this chart that shows it's, you know, there's like 7 different brands that make this kind of product. Here's their different ranges. Here's the general price per square foot. It was 99% accurate. There were a few things that maybe like by a few dollars were off here and there, but I think it was just generally accurate information. And it showed me the providers that I could go to get that product in my city here. Wow. People are going to do these same things for churches. They're going to be looking for, you know, I'm struggling with addiction in this area of my life, and it's really been hard for me. What are some solutions that I can look into? And how cool would it be if it recommended treatment programs and 12-step programs and Celebrate Recovery that your church offers because you have something there for them in your community? That's going to be something that, well, it. I still think I've seen this. So just to give you some raw numbers, 8 billion, that's how many searches are done daily on Google. 1 billion is how many are done on ChatGPT every day. So it is an 8-to-1 ratio right now. So if you're going to focus on only one, it's still Google.
That's interesting, yeah.
But I think that the crazy thing about this is that, like, just a year ago, that number was closer to like 150,000 searches or 150 million searches were done.
It's growing big time.
It's growing huge. I would imagine this is totally prediction, but I think like 2 years from now, I'd say that AI searches overtake Google searches as the main volume. Now, Google may be, you know, their tool, maybe one of the ones that we're using to search. And even in a Google search now, you're going to get the AI overviews that you want to rank on, those kinds of things too. So the world is changing. You need to take that seriously. I guess that's the point.
I'm using that as a matter of fact. As someone who hasn't totally moved away from Google to AI, I still use the AI version from Google as far as when I'm searching. Yeah. It's just more detailed and draws out more, I find.
It's just faster too. Like, I don't have to click onto a website to get the answer I'm looking for. It'll just give me it, and it's usually accurate. Now, I will say this. I we had all these people a couple of weeks ago show up at like 30 minutes after our service ended. We're like, what on earth? Like they said, no, I just looked online and that's what Google said. And we're like, why would Google say that? We have our Google business profile all dialed in. It says we start at 9 a.m. These people are all showing up at like 10:45 for an 11 o'clock service. Come to find out that Google took a church with a similar name to ours. And they the instant kind of the AI tool, the Gemini kind of search summary that you get when you do a Google search, it misinterpreted and gave people wrong information about when our services started.
Oh,
so
boy.
To the solution to that, like, there really isn't one right now. You're beholden to whatever AI thinks is accurate. So you do your best to kind of get all your info right. And I don't think it's happening anymore. We've done some checks to see, but yeah, this is kind of the downside of that is it does still sometimes get wrong information. It's not
and
as accurate as you.
It's good to go, obviously, to the website to double check as well.
Definitely.
So, but yeah, that's good. So, well, good. This next one's a good one here. Very relevant. If you're not using video to tell your story online, that's not a good practice.
Yeah, I think that video is just so powerful. Photography is powerful too, but video is even more powerful to tell stories. And I'm not even talking about, you know, you physically as the pastor of a church telling your story, like, this is when we started and this is what we believe and this is our mission statement. That's good. You should probably have those things on your site. That'd be that's a nice to have.
Yeah.
I think it's just video of, like we say here, is people caught in the act living the values of your church.
Yep, that's right.
So having B-roll footage of that happening on your homepage, you know, putting those things onto your Instagram reels or, you know, onto TikTok of you know, maybe baptism. We're doing baptisms at our church this week. Like having baptism video, a video showing people going from death to life. Like that's what really moves the needle for us. So
that's
awesome. Super powerful. And it is the right way to be telling stories. I'm not totally on the don't use text train. I think text still has a very powerful role in all of this.
Yeah.
But video, there's no doubt in my mind that it is the best storytelling tool that we have at our disposal.
Yeah. And I tell people all the time, yes, it's best to have a high-end camera if you can, and just the best camera equipment to capture life happening on a Sunday and those experiences. But really iPhones or any smartphone these days can pull that off even at a high level compared to ever before. So I often will get a smaller church that thinks they can't pull that kind of stuff off on their website or social media like a larger church. Not true. If you have someone that's even good with a smartphone, and again, we recommend putting in more into your video production if you can, but yeah, it could be pulled off easily, and it really just reduces people's apprehension too. And they see people, when they see that movement, people having a good time, a hand being shaken in the the auditorium there, wherever, or the foyer, I should say, at the door from a greeter. Mm-hmm. It really tells the story a lot better. So yeah, that's good stuff. So mistake number 7 still happens. Churches have gotten better at this one, I think, Thomas, but that's not following up with first time visitors after they come.
You think they have gotten better?
Well, let me put it to you this way. More of them have some sort of follow-up. It may not be the best follow-up. It might be what you're thinking of there. So
my experience is that, like, I think we've gotten better at knowing we're supposed to follow up with our first-time visitors.
Yeah.
I don't know that I have seen evidence that the churches have in general got better at actually doing the follow-up with first-time visitors, actually executing that plan, making sure it's working, communicating with them.
Yeah.
And really, I'm not here to advocate a particular method for that. We do have a whole video. I'll link to that about how I recommend you follow up with first-time visitors. And in it, you can download our entire email sequence and use it. So be sure to watch that. But I guess what I would say is that so many churches, it's such a struggle just to implement this and actually, because a lot of times it takes some manpower and just consistency. I just talk to churches all the time that just they have a plan, they just don't execute it as well as they know that they should.
Yeah.
So that is a mistake. I believe that it is it's living out the parable of the talents and burying your talent in this case here. It's taking a gift that God has given you and not investing and doing everything you can do to see it watered and kind of carried out and bud into something that's really valuable. A visitor is a gift, and we really need to be cherishing every one of those and doing everything we can to help them make that next step and get connected to the Lord. So yeah, I think this is a huge mistake. You can watch that video I mentioned, but other than that, there's no way around that. It just takes some muscle and some manpower and some thought and some work to execute it. And I promise you that it is worth the dividends you'll get from it. Stickier visitors makes a huge difference in churches. And so, yeah, it's just something you have to implement.
Yeah. And there's some really cool tools that we don't have. That's a whole, and I think we have done a podcast on that, but I'm sure we have some really cool visitor follow-up tools too, that we can most certainly give advice to use. So good. Last but not least, making new guests feel like outsiders. We don't want that.
We don't. Yeah. I think that we talked in a recent episode about singling
putting
out first-time visitors,
putting
them on the spot.
Yeah.
And then this one here, I think, is kind of more just, I think it's partly in the language that we're using.
Yeah.
That's a good way to make people feel like if people don't understand the things that we're talking about, then they're not going to feel like they're part of our family. This is something that so many churches struggle with. And I think the problem with this one, too, is most churches don't realize they're struggling with it.
Yeah.
I think that I assume this is still the case, is that I don't do a lot of these kinds of calls with our clients anymore. But I remember we used to ask this question, what do people really love about your church? And what did everybody always say? Ian, maybe they still do, Ian. What do people love about their church? What do they say, Ian?
What do they say? Oh,
yeah.
I felt very warm and they say we are a very warm and welcoming church.
We're a very warm and welcoming church, and everybody is family. Yeah. When you're here, you're family.
Friendly, yeah.
And so I usually would have to ask the follow-up question and say, okay, every other church that I talked to over the last month told me the exact same thing.
Yeah.
Do you think your church is actually at another level when it comes to that? Or do you feel like that's just something that you've trained yourself to think and say about your church? Because I got to tell you that every church thinks that, but the reputation that churches have is the exact opposite in a lot of cases.
Yeah.
That they are not warm and inviting. People are scared to go to churches.
Yeah.
And I'm not saying that's right or wrong. I'm just saying that's the way that it is. People are afraid of it. They're fearful that they're going to be judged. They're going to feel like they don't know what they're doing. They don't know. And all that is kind of how things actually are. So I say all that, you need to be, as a leader of a church, ultra intentional about this. It doesn't happen by accident. You can't just rely on, the people are nice to me. Well, you're the pastor of the church. Of course they're nice to you. They feel like they're part of the family because you've been part of the family for 10 years.
That's right.
And yes, you see that. But you have to actually be ultra intentional about how do you welcome your visitors to make them feel like they are They are not outsiders, but they are welcome to come just as they are. We're not going to leave them where they are if they don't know Jesus, but they're welcome to come as they are, and they're going to be embraced and loved and cared for and be really warmly welcomed. So that's kind of my thought on that.
Weren't you made to feel like an outsider at one point? I remember a story of you telling me when you and your family showed up late to a church and were thoroughly rebuked by the greeter.
I was. The greeter said, "Hey, just so you know, Pastor really hates it when people show up late." We were like five minutes late for service or something at our first one of our first visits there. And it was like,
it's a good thing you already knew the it's a good thing you already knew the pastor and you were coming there for a different reason. Otherwise, you would have not been back to that church.
I went there. So. I talked to the pastor afterwards. Yeah. I called him the next day and said, "Hey, just so you know, this is what happened." And, you know, we got a good laugh about it. And, you know, it's something the lady meant well. She wasn't trying to, you know, to be mean to us or anything. But perfect example. This is something that's so common with churches is that we can sometimes be a little bit weird and we have to be intentional to make sure people feel welcomed.
Yeah. Yeah. That's funny. So, but good stuff. We hope this was helpful for sure. We hope it helped people brush up on their church marketing tactics and strategies.
Yeah, if you have something you're doing that you're wondering if you should be doing it or not, let us know. We'll answer that. We answer every comment that people leave on our YouTube videos, and we try to do it on every channel here. So drop us a line. If you have something that's working for your church, we'd love to hear about that as well. So leave us a comment down below. Thanks for being a part of the Reach Right family, and we'll see you next time.
See ya.